This is the In This League Fantasy Podcast Network. In This League Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Online at inthisleague.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Interact and follow the show on Twitter at InThisLeaguePod. Now, here's your hosts, Bogman and the Welsh.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Hello, darkness. Hello, friends. It is the final episode of Hell Week, and boy, how aptly, how apropos it is of a named episode of a Hell Week with everything that has gone down. It's a hellacious episode because we're talking about catchers and relievers. You, friendos, are the real MVPs because you're here for this episode. But know that we're going to entertain you. Know that we've got stuff. And why were we playing Hello Darkness, My Old Friend at the top? Could it have been because of Severino's Tommy John? Yeah, I mean, that's not good. And we put a little disclaimer in the last episode, and Bobby got a little bit of gloating. Could it be about Chris Sale having pneumonia? Nah, that's not great. That's really not good. Or, oh, could it be that Giancarlo Stanton is already hurt?
He is already hurt. I mean, you can laugh all you want. Carlos Correa is still playing fewer games.
People are literally LOLing themselves because that ridiculous bet that you want to have that's on record, I've already won.
Yeah, but you wouldn't man up and agree to the bet.
We already bet. We bet $300. Yeah, that happened. That happened 2 weeks ago.
Right.
You don't remember?
It's going to be like, here is Bogman saying that he bets $300. It's going to be like, I bet $300.
I'll piece all your things. Yeah.
Yeah. It is hilarious.
It's the funniest thing that's ever happened.
The best part about the whole thing, and you would think that we would time this or something, or we record this after the news. No, not a chance. I vehemently defend Giancarlo Stanton's honor, and he just spits in my dumb fat face a day later, not even a day later, 6 hours after we record that show and post it, he's injured with his calf after I sit there and defend him over Carlos Correa. I have said it many, many times on this show, and I can't back off of it now. I don't want to go into the season with a guy who's going to start on the injured list. That includes Giancarlo Stanton. So now if I'm doing redraft, I'm not taking him completely off my list, and I will still draft him because I'm a crazy person. But the advice that I have to give to everyone here, I can't recommend him. I just can't.
You can't?
You can't.
Really?
And I love the guy, and he's going to hit a million homers and all that
in
stuff.
In MLB The Show when he's sitting at his
MLB
couch at
show,
home because
yes,
he's
in
injured.
Home run derby. That's the only way you can do it because he doesn't play any goddamn games.
Right, so let me get something straight for a second. You're not done with Giancarlo Stanton.
I just, look, man, there's always something about everybody has like that player, right? Where you just keep drafting him.
Yeah, sure.
Regardless of how much they burned you before. It's like a bad relationship. It's the same thing. This is my toxic relationship with Giancarlo Stanton is that I keep coming back. I just do because, he plays 150 games. One of these times he's going to hit 70 bombs. I want to be on the ride when he does that. So, he still has just a massive amount of power. I'm always going to be a power first person. So, that's what I want to see happen. Now, is it going to
happen?
Do
you like your power in game or just theoretical?
I would like it to happen. And we've seen it happen before. The dude's won an MVP. It's just, it's becoming comical now. Someone listed all the stuff that he's happened since the beginning of the 2019 season. It's like right calf, left calf, right knee, shoulder pain, wrist pain, all the stuff. So it's just...
Do you have the tweet up? I mean, I'll go look for it real quick. I think that is worth
it. I can't remember who tweeted it. Probably 100 people tweeted that nonsense. It's just, it's a long string of soft tissue injuries that are no
soft
good
is
in
right.
fantasy.
I can't
deny it now that he's going to miss all of spring training, but you almost think that so many damn dominoes are falling for the stupid Yankees that maybe they're just like, look, your calf hurts. You're not playing in the spring. We don't need any more injuries.
Yeah.
Just come back when the season starts. Like, I don't know. It just seems
the Yankees got
so
a bad go
weird.
Of it right now.
They really do. Yeah, they really, really do.
I can't find that tweet. I literally, there's so many tweets about stupid Giancarlo Stanton. I think we were out at games when that happened. Because we went out to some, we had the best day, by the way, on Tuesday. It was an all baseball day where I was in the backfields in the morning with our listeners. Shout out to Scott Gamble and his family. They came out. We hung out on the backfields. I didn't hurt anyone else. Oh, by the way, the Christian Walker thing is the
There's
most.
So much to unpack in this show.
Unbelievable thing that's ever. I mean, it happened. I told you guys that I told you what happened before the news on Roto World or wherever came out. This happened on, it's happened over the weekend because we had pre-recorded the corner infield episode to hit Monday. And then I was able to give you the info whenever it happened, like on a Saturday or Sunday or whatever it was. I gave you the info of what happened to Christian Walker and we put it into the Tuesday episode. That, you know, I was talking with him, I yelled to him, and then he did this stop, and he falls, and he lands on his ass, and then he, you know, the look, oh, God, when he said, like, they just redid the pavement, I was like, please don't, dude, you can't do this to me. And then joked about the guy who looked at me after and was like, if he gets hurt, I'm blaming you, and then literally people tweeted and text me the blurb that says general soreness that Christian Walker is out. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah,
what are
they
going to
say, busted ass? I mean, you know, which is exactly what happened. He busted his ass, and his tailbone is probably sore, and he can't go out and play. So, but,
That's
you know,
my fault.
At least among all of those, you gave me a great gift, and the Diamondbacks are probably moving to Vancouver.
Probably. Oh, my God. This is a big one. Okay, so on that day, we go out. We got to talk about all that stuff. We go and see Dodgers, Diamondbacks, and, of course, the stupid Dodgers sent out just literally the worst players. They sent out Edwin Rios and, you know, Terrence Gore and A.J. Pollock and all the just garbage players the Dodgers have for us to see, you know, and we had to see AJ Pollock get a homer. No Betts, no Bellinger. And then later that night, we went out to the ASU New Mexico State game and saw Spencer Torkelson and Nick Gonzalez, who are both going to be top five overall picks in the
freeze our balls off.
It's the coldest I've ever been.
It was so cold.
I've never been more cold in my life watching
and
baseball
such
games.
Pansies with the cold too. Like Welsh is like, how weird is it going to look if I go buy a blanket and we share it? Is that okay at a baseball game? I don't know. But the I looked, it was like 60 degrees. It wasn't.
It felt like it was
all.
60. Felt like 30. It was the coldest. It was cold during the day too. Okay, so what you're alluding to? This is the big reveal. So this video is going to be up on our YouTube. I'm still working on it. I've seen people subscribing to the YouTube, and I'm organizing all the stuff we've been doing and trying to get it back on the YouTube channel. So our player debates, the ranks that we've been doing through the week, I'm going to individually splice them up, put them on the YouTube, just some fun content. And I got two pieces of content that's going to go up. Hopefully, we'll both be up by the time you're listening to this. One was actually an update on the Carl's Jr. I got an authentication video of Bogman signing some of the Carl's Jr. bags because they are finally going out. And
that's right.
Bogman, have we done this on here, telling the story of what happened, how you had to get them?
No, we have not.
Tell them how you had to get them.
Okay, so I go to Carl's Jr. and it's like 9 o'clock, and I go up to the door and I go to open it. And it's locked, and I look
9
on
p.m.,
the door.
By the way, not a.m. Bogman doesn't
do a.m. Yeah, 9 a.m.? No, I only wake up before 9 a.m. today, you know, because I have the runs. But the, you know, the door is completely locked. And I look, and it says lobby open until 10:30. And I'm like, oh, well, this is great news. So strike one already. I go to the drive-thru, and I order a burger, and then I get to the window. And it is the angriest looking Native American dude. And I'm trying to explain to him why I need bags.
Oh my God, you're explaining it?
The look on his face, he's just like, I don't care.
Well, I mean, why would you just say, can I just have the bags? Don't even try to explain it.
Yeah, well, because I think I feel like you sound like a weirdo if you just go like, can I get 20 bags? I know this is weird. You know,
I think that is perfectly fine where you stop. If you start going like, all right, let me explain why I need them, the guys.
Yeah, I mean, no. I've never seen this dude before. Obviously, I hadn't been to Carl's Jr. since my last video. So he's just looking at me. I'm like, can you charge me for them? And he just has that look on his face where, you know, the guy's going to be like, I can't give you bags. You know what I mean? Like, just to be annoying, he's going to do that because he's annoyed in his day. I'm like, okay, look, my burger and soda was like $8 or something, or $12 or something. And I was like, how about this? How about I'm going to give you a 20. You keep the rest of it and just give me 20 bags. And he's like, yeah, we can do that. So
you paid the guy 20 bucks. Listen,
not
this
$20.
Is,
I had okay, a meal 12 too, bucks. So we got like $8.
Okay.
So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, still, you. So people
yeah,
know.
I mean, I had to pay for them.
You invested. You invested money back in to get those bags, and you bought some nice little pens, and yeah. We recorded a video of you signing a couple of them. Though, I literally could not get. I've never been more frustrated trying to explain to Bogman different ways to do the bags. I'm like, all right, let's use a different color pen, and you could have like a 1 of 5 in red. And Bogman's like, okay. So he takes a red pen, puts
okay,
1 of 5, then takes the black pen, and then he took the black pen and signed it. I'm like, that's not what I was saying. Sign with the red pen. He's like, I'm not signing with a red pen.
You understand that you're just too much sometimes,
oh,
right?
Oh, absolutely, like, absolutely.
Okay, all right. Just so you know, like, I know I probably sound like an idiot in that spot or whatever, but I'm like, dude, I already went. I bought a Sharpie. I went to Burger King. I went to Carl's Jr. with this jerk and paid him to get bags. Like, I've done enough.
I know. You know? We were in my car like, while you're doing it.
These colors making a rainbow here. I'm like, just give me a goddamn black pen.
Bogman does. It's just so funny because it was like he signed it and I was like, hey, there's the first bag. And I'm like, now let's do like a, I was thinking maybe you could do a 1 of 1 in black, and he didn't understand. So I'm like, here, take the red and we'll do like 5 in red. And those would be their own little series, 1 of 5. And then he takes the red, puts 1 of 5, and then he comes back and takes a black pen and then signs it. And I'm like, no, what are you doing? It was fun.
I thought the top corner was the red only.
No,
I didn't know
you sign in red.
Red.
You sign it in red. That's a.
God, I don't care about cards at all.
But they are all getting personalized. So that is happening. We did that video, but that wasn't the big reveal. So the big reveal was I got Bogman a present, and I was very excited about it. So he gets to the game. We have to go back down to my car because I didn't bring anything of it, and we did both these videos and. I'm going to set it up, and I set it up in the video and here. I'm going to just let everybody hear. This is also on the YouTube if you want to see it, because there's some funny stuff actually Bogman ended up doing in it. This will be on the YouTube, but here is the audio of me presenting Bogman with a present.
Hey, it's Bogman.
Yep, I'm here.
Hi, Bogman.
Hi, Welsh.
How are you?
I am good now.
Are you excited about catchers and relief pitchers?
Sure, yeah.
Tell me about your favorite catcher.
My favorite catcher is Carson Kelly.
Hey.
Because he plays for the D-backs.
What about relief pitchers?
My favorite relief pitcher to take this year is obviously Hader.
Okay.
If I can.
Because you're
like
a Hader.
Start the run. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Who else? Let's talk more. Let's talk about closers specifically.
You're going to give me something with Archie, aren't you?
I don't know what you're talking
Archie
about.
Archie Bradley.
I have a present for you. But is Archie Bradley your favorite?
He was. Yeah.
He was?
No.
Yeah?
He never was.
Well, what do you not like about Archie?
Oklahoma.
Is that it?
That's most of it.
Okay. Well,
also that he throws 91 down the pipe. When he loses a knuckle curve. When he gets a knuckle curve, when it's going, he's good.
Yeah.
Trouble with the knuckle curve, yes. And then it's 91 down the pipe.
I mean, you are right. I did get... I'm going to just let everybody see this for a minute. I just want to see this right here. I did get you an Archie signed ball. Because I'm a nice guy. I'm you know, world-renowned nice guy. Always, that's people know me for that. Well, hold on. I just want everyone to see it.
Drag this shit out.
So this is you identify what you don't like about Archie. Will you read this for me?
I mean, it says go Spooners.
It says go Sooners.
Yeah. His handwriting's pretty terrible.
I went to Archie, and I said, "We signed this man. This was a ball that was a foul ball here." And I said, "Can I ask you a favor? Could you write go?" It does look like it says go Spooners. Let's go close in on that. I said, could you write go Sooners? And he goes, I don't usually inscribe stuff, but that I will inscribe.
Of course he will. Of course he will.
I was going to say to maybe go like, you know, down hook him, like draw a picture on it. But he was very happy to write Go Sooner.
I'm sure he was.
I'll get you a case for that because I want you to take really good care of it.
Right. Okay.
So this is, again, Archie Bradley, your favorite closer, Go Sooners.
Go Sooners. Yep. Well, his handwriting is just as bad as mine. Yeah. So I feel good about that.
Yeah, so. Okay. So you're going to put that up in the man cave?
Yeah. Why is this so close to my face?
It's not. It doesn't look so close.
You're like zooming in. Yeah, you're like,
are
hey.
You close?
God. Yeah.
Let's look at the volume.
Yeah, yeah. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Yeah. Hold on. Yeah. Yeah. No. It was a great present. I really appreciate it. So thoughtful. I love it. It's amazing. Fucking asshole.
Go Sooners.
Go Spooners. Go Sooners. Still, my favorite thing of the entire thing was that Archie, out of his way, was to be like, I don't inscribe things, but I'll do it for this. He was so excited to put Go Sooners on a baseball. Like, that got him to break his inscription thing.
Yeah, that was great.
Wasn't it great?
So, didn't you like in the video where you're like, what's the thing you hate about Archie? And I was like, well, Oklahoma.
Oh, you nailed it, too. I mean, you literally... It's a credit to me knowing how to poke Bogman's buttons. And I could just say, like, because he could have said, like, well, I hate that, you know, he can't control the knuckle curve. I hate that he just doesn't save good games, all that. It's just immediately, without hesitation, I'm like, what do you hate most? That he's a Sooner. And
yeah.
So I was out at the backfields and they were doing BP. And I was over, it's hard to explain the Diamondbacks backfield is really weird because you walk back and there's like a field. And then
it's
there's
like a trail almost.
It's a total. It's like a hiking trail. And the first leg you come over to your there's the big batting cages. And then to the left, there's a field. Then there's a half field that's only for an infield. Then to your right, as you're going down this trail, is the training facility where they have synthetic grass where I took some pictures of like Bumgarner and Gallen people will see and where the guys run and do training stuff and throw. Then if you go around the trail all the way back and around, it comes to the four fields where they're practicing. So they're over there hitting. I'm over by the synthetic grass. And then all of a sudden, whoever the F was up, would just started spraying balls over the fence and they're hitting everywhere. And some security guard got a ball and I just happened to like look over at him and he just threw it to me. And I'm like, oh, cool. And then immediately I was like, I'm going to get Archie to sign this for Bogman. And wouldn't you know it, 5 minutes later, Archie's over on the little half field doing whatever. I think they were just doing bunt drills or something like that. And I just went over and Archie stopped for everybody. And I'm just like, Archie, I got to ask you a favor. Could you write Go Sooners on this? And his big old smile. And I was going to tell him to do the down hook 'em though. I was going to do that.
Yeah.
Have you put the ball up in the studio?
Yeah, I left it in my car hoping someone will steal it.
Come on.
My car's also unlocked, so
someone
can just open up the door and take it right away from me.
Do you need a protector? Like a ball protector?
Yeah, I need a ball protector for sure. What do you think I'm going to do with that ball?
I think you should put it up in the studio with your memorabilia.
I'm probably going to break a TV with it the first time that dude chokes a game away.
Ooh,
so.
Okay. Yeah, I did give you an outlet now. Don't you have some autographed Archie Bradley cards, too?
Do you think those didn't go immediately right into the trash?
Oh, no. What is your problem with
right
Archie?
Right into the trash. What do you mean, what's my problem? That's the whole point of this whole thing. I hate that dude.
That's ridiculous.
So, come on. I don't hate him. He's a good enough closer when he has both the pitches working, but you know, that's like a coin flip. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't, and when he doesn't, he's just completely overrated. I mean, what pick was he in the draft, Welch? Wasn't he like a top 10 pick?
Archie? Yeah, that was the year that the Diamondbacks had two first round picks and they took
Bauer and Archie, right?
Bauer and Archie. That's right. Because I was about to do was the year that one other year that they had two picks where they took AJ Pollock and Bobby Bortring.
Bobby Bortring.
No. Every time I say Bobby Bortring, everybody's like, oh my God. But yeah, that was the Bauer and Archie year. And then, you know, Bauer ended up making that song about Miguel Montero. You know what's still amazing to me? Is that thing scrubbed from the internet? Did Bauer figure out how to scrub that thing from the internet?
I mean, I hope he did.
I can't find it.
Embarrassment. No way. Hold on.
I can find all his other embarrassing songs. His absolutely embarrassing, like, I'm a diamond in the whatever garbage he does. But I can't find the one where he talks crap about Diamondback fans of Montero.
No, I think it was hold on, Trevor Bauer rap.
Well, you're going to get his like more studio releases.
Yeah, it's the first one that comes up. Consummate.
Is it?
Yeah,
does he know what consummate means?
Yeah, I do.
No, does he? Does he know what consummate means?
Oh, well, I have no idea. Right. Why would he? So, that dude. It's just a line. It's not a whole song making fun of Miguel Montero. Yeah. It's just a line. And then he's, you know, and it's really, he has a line of complaining about Diamondbacks fans too.
That's what I said. There's a Diamondbacks Montero in there.
Yeah. So it's just the worst thing that's ever happened to my ears.
Yep.
Is that
Bauer to your ears.
So
Bradley to your baseballs and Stanton to your fantasy teams. Those are the worst things that have happened to you. I can't believe I already won the bet. It's amazing.
Why do you think you've won? First of all, you never bet.
We had $600 on the line. $600. You had $600.
Well, it was $300 earlier, and it's actually no dollars because you didn't accept the bet.
$650 and dinner.
And by the way, Stanton might be all right for opening day still. We don't know.
Is that what you're telling yourself?
Look, I'm not. I'm telling everyone, if you can avoid drafting him, I would do that because I don't like going into the season with guys already on the IL. And it seems like that is how he's going to start, but I'm still going to be in.
Okay, then how about this? I want to give him credit, but I just don't remember who it was. It was on Vlad or somebody tweeted out right after the Stanton news. I think it was like the next draft or drafts couple after the grade one strain, whatever, blah, 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 with Stanton, that the draft champions, he ended up going like 109. So do you think that's adequate or do you think that's too high, too early? Like, what do you think about Stanton like going 100 overall?
I mean, I would take him at 100 overall, even if I wasn't a believer. So, because right now it's a calf strain, which it's annoying, and he has so many injuries. I understand people's trepidation, but if he just misses the first 2 weeks and he's good to go after that, then you're still getting a ton of production at pick 100. I mean, if he was there, didn't you say you took Gary Sanchez in your draft?
Yeah, I took him at like one in TGFBI, which I think maybe at the end of this episode, we'll drop a couple TGFBI updates if people are curious, because I'm only through, as we're recording this, through 8 picks, though by the time this airs, I might have 2 more. And I have a thread on Twitter if people want to see them. And Bogman's through like 12. But one of those picks, it was like pick 103 or something like that, or 106. And it's a 2-catcher league, and only one catcher had gone. And I was just like, well, 15 teams. Gary Sanchez is still here. I think the guy that I really wanted had just gone. So I said, screw it. I'm going to pull the trigger on Gary Sanchez, something I usually don't do with catchers.
So let me ask you this. If Gary Sanchez was available, but Stanton was still available, even with this calf injury, would you have taken Stanton there?
Because
that's what you're talking, like around the 100s, between 100 and 110, you know?
Here's my problem with right now. I just want some more news. Like, they're saying, you know,
I understand.
He could be back right around.
I found the tweet, by the way.
Which one?
The one with the injuries.
Okay, let me hear it.
It says, since the start of 2019, Giancarlo Stanton has missed time with a strained left biceps, a strained left shoulder, a strained left calf, a strained right PCL, a strained right quad, a strained right calf.
Man, Giancarlo Strainton? Strainton, does that work?
Come on. Why do you have to immediately dad joke it?
Sorry. Was that since the beginning of when?
2019.
Oh, my God.
I know. Well, he had 5 of these were last year. The only one this year was the calf so far. It's just not good,
so
man.
It's so many injuries.
It's so many. It's not a good look at all. So.
I just want a little bit more info on it, because when they say, like, he might, I immediately go a month. When I hear, like, well, you know, he could be back around the start of the season, that could also be they instantly put him on the IL. And luckily, he can DH. You know, so that bodes well for him maybe getting back out there. But yeah, I guess around 100 is okay. This format that we're playing in TGFBI with 15 teams, like 12 teams, I think it's a lot easier. 10 and 12, it's a lot easier to stomach.
There's no injured list in TGFBI also.
Makes it even worse about it. So yeah, you know what? You're right. Like, he's not gone for the season, but I think he's also around a territory. See, this would be my one little caveat with him. He was around a territory where I think in the outfield episode, I was saying I'm getting to the point where, this is before we knew the injury, I would rather pass on taking a risk on Judge, and at that time Stanton hadn't been hurt, and maybe even not considering Stanton when guys like Gallo and Soler, you know, big power guys are going later. I think I'd rather take that risk than the high-end risk on those guys who have maybe a little bit better of a batting average chance. And at the same time, if I'm going into a draft right now, Stanton, like I might already make my move to get Soler, you know, and I might make my move to get like a Pete Alonso. So do I need to take the big risk when there's still some good pitchers out there, or a Gary Sanchez would be out there? I just think where I was optimistic about Giancarlo Stanton, you know, all jokes aside, I was optimistic about the crazy big power that he is early on. I just don't think it's worth it. I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze at this point. Like, ooh, I'm going to get a big value. He's already hurt. This is the start. He's just going to be more hurt.
Dude, last year is this year is mirroring last year. I mean, Severino got hurt and banged up in spring training and then only threw, whatever, 19 innings. Now he's going to throw none this year. And yeah. Stanton got hurt in spring training. And then it led to a season filled with little nagging injuries that only got him into whatever it was, 12 games. Yeah. So,
well, let me ask you another one real quick. This is another one of, you know, you took this side. We have the player debate that's out here. You can find the podcast version. It probably won't be up on YouTube by the time you're listening to this, unless you're listening in March. But we have this Sale versus Snell debate. And I was firm team Blake Snell, and you were firm team Chris Sale. And Chris Sale's already hurt. And Chris Sale, he's got pneumonia. They said he's going to start the year on the IL because he's behind. So it's a positive that he's not hurt. I misspoke when I said that immediately. But he's already behind the eight ball. Like, how cautious are you going to be with Chris Sale? You know, we just coming off the SP episode. We didn't have that info. Does he need to go down a spot or two?
Maybe a couple spots just because he's so high among starting pitchers. But I like, this isn't a mechanical thing or a strain issue. So I'm okay with him starting a couple weeks later and then ramping it up, you know, missing two or three starts with Sale at the beginning of the season because of the pneumonia. I mean, it's not an ideal situation, of course, but I don't think I change him too much. Just, you know, the player debate between Snell and Sale, I think now you just go, okay, well, there's a little something off with Sale, so let's go Snell. You know, so that's probably all the adjusting I would do for him.
You wouldn't take Darvish over Sale?
Here's what I'd say. So I have hit Sale at 7. I would probably move him down to like 10. So I'd move him below Snell, Darvish, and Corbin. So somewhere in that area, because he's definitely going to miss two starts, it seems like. So, and that's, you know, it's not gigantic, but it's not nothing either. I'd rather take the healthy guys, and then, you know, you get into the guys that are kind of have questionable health and stats in the past. I mean, Jack Flaherty with that amazing second half in Strasburg. I've just never been on the Strasburg train.
Who's healthy? That's funny. He's healthy.
Yeah. Well, he is healthy now, but super healthy. And like I said, look, this is the highest I've ranked Strasburg, and this is the most likely for me to take him. But people are overpaying for Strasburg. But whatever. The whole point is about Sale. I would move Sale down like two or three notches. That's all.
Another guy that is gonna that's gonna get an adjustment. And I would tell all you guys, because this is the last one of 25 minutes, and we haven't talked about catchers and relievers, but we've a rank update is dropping. So March 1st, was that Saturday?
That's Sunday.
Okay, so Sunday, you guys can expect most likely Sunday. At worst, it'd be Monday, but usually we drop those on the 1st, especially this one of importance, is we're going to have our brand new rank updates. And another guy that's going to get an adjusted spot based off of where our ranks were. I don't even know if we really talked about him in the SP episode. I don't remember, but Griffin Canning, who's being sent for an MRI on his right elbow, and that is a big old
MRI and elbow soreness, forearm soreness at this time of year is just terrible.
No skanks. You know what's funny about him? I had him significantly lower than the average price, or at least cost. He was like, Fantasy Pros had him ranked as the 75th pitcher, or I'm sorry, the 60th. I had him at 75. He was as high as 47. So I look at him, and I think a lot of I think more people are going to come down to my territory, maybe even further down. And I might, I'm not sure if I'm going to go too crazy further down because I was already relatively low. He was fine. He was, I liked him as a late shot, but as a 47th overall pitcher, I mean, you were talking about taking him maybe over David Price or around Matt Boyd or Julio Urias or something. Technically, he was higher ranked, or one ranker had him at 47 and Urias's average price was 49. Like, that's crazy to me. This is a horrific sign. A horrific sign for the Angels, for fantasy stuff. Maybe it'll come back good, but I think he needs to be post 60 at least, you know, that stupid fantasy pros price. He needs to be plummeted down. And I think he might be better off, you know, looking at guys like Jeff Samardzija, you know, Joey Lucchesi, maybe even Kevin Gausman in that range.
I mean, right now, until we hear news, you just can't draft him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you got to avoid.
Yeah, you got to avoid until we get it's a strain. He's going to miss 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but it kind of doesn't really matter. You hear elbow stuff and you're going to start dropping that guy. So
yeah.
I already had him down in the 60s. Where did you have him, Welsh?
75.
So, yeah, I mean, you already had him low anyway. So, but yeah, I'm going to move him down because I have Samardzija a little bit higher. I would move him down as well. Well, let me ask you this. Right now, would you go with Cole Hamels or would you go with Griffin Canning?
Oh,
I think I would go with Hamels because
I have Hamels higher. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so I think I would go with Hamels as of right now. What about Paxton versus Canning?
I'd go Paxton.
Yeah, me too.
Pretty easy on Paxton. I mean, if the one piece of maybe positive news the Yankees have been getting is like that he might be ramping up a little bit. I mean, think
right,
of the
he's ahead of schedule.
The hits, you're not going to feel bad for the Yankees, but the hits that team is taking between Judge banged up and Stanton and Severino and Paxton, it's crazy.
This time last week, we were talking about yeah. Hey, look, Stanton is healthy and Judge is hurt. LOL, LOL, LOL. And now they're all hurt.
Now it's just LOL, LOL, LOL.
Yeah. Yeah, I was avoiding Twitter yesterday. I got many, many tweets about Stanton. It was just like, of course this happens.
Yeah.
Of course this happens. On the day the outfield show comes out, of course.
That is how it goes. I want to get into the episode. You know, this is kind of a refresher episode. This is why this is an important one to listen to. But only other little notes from some of the games. I was out on Wednesday, saw Chris Paddock pitch. He utilized a little bit of that curveball. He looked on point as always. I think he had 3 strikeouts. First 2 batters, he struck out. I have a video out about it. But one guy that got ahead of him that, you know, we both like and kind of, you know, post 120 range, really want to get for big powers. Franmil Reyes just looks absolutely locked in. He absolutely murder balled a pitch off of Paddock for a double into left field. It was a first pitch. I'm looking at it right now. I think it was a first pitch slider, and he just cranked it. And after the game, I was over where they were, and they were talking, and Franmil was kind of on Paddock. He was like, "You threw me that pitch, and I cranked it." And they were hugging because Franmil used to be with the Padres. Ketel Marte looks locked in and good. I think he just missed a homer in the game we were at. Still love Ketel. Very, very excited about him this year. And
he had a bomb in his first spring training AB, too.
And he pimped it. Starling Marte, I actually talked to him on the backfields. And first thing I said, I'm like, "How you love it here, man?" And he's just like, "It's the best." I'm like, "It's the best?" He's like, "No humidity." And I was like, "Oh, it's great. It's great." So Marte is very happy to be here. It's a Marte Parte, if you will. All right, so let's get into the stuff and things. We want to remind you guys, patreon.com/ITL Army. New ranks coming out this weekend. We will have tiers attached to them. I'm going to have a few notes on some guys that you can move up or down just for a few of the other. I mean, these are head-to-head with, you know, a roto consideration in our ranks, but they're made for head-to-head. Roto doesn't change too much. You know strategically where you can adjust, but I'll give you like maybe OBP or points league adjustments. We've got Secret Show. We've got the Prospect One ranks. We've got so much stuff, and you guys are directly supporting us even as we continue to pump out content. Did you see this guy who has someone doesn't like the Shogo song? He photoshopped. It's a pretty good job by him, I'll actually admit. But he did a change.org, and it says, hey, guys, sign this. And I can't, I'm not going to respond to him because he doesn't follow, so I'm not going to give him credit. But it says, ITL can never play Shogo Akiyama song on podcast again. And it's like Photoshop, like 3 million have signed it of the 4.5. I was like, are you kidding me? I'm like, that's sad. It says, let's see. It is so bad that if ITL must play a song, we are willing to allow them to play a snippet of Nickelback instead.
Oh, wow. Come on. I like the Shogo Akiyama song.
I'm going to play it every single episode now.
It's a little dad joke-ish.
Of course
you
it
know?
Is. Of course it is.
But
I'm going to put it up on... You know what the inverse of this is? Before this this douche decided to do that, and maybe he's nice, but he doesn't follow me, so I assume he's just trolling, so I'm going to call you a douche because you said that. Though I will give him very good credit for his the funny stuff
Photoshop
he did on the photo.
Skills.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah. But
you're like going through wanting to hate this guy and then like him. At
well,
the same
yeah, I mean,
time.
Like he's being rude and he doesn't follow, but at the same time he did a good job, so I've got to give him credit there. Is this guy Jonathan tweets me? It was like 5 hours before that. He goes, "How do I get the Shogo song?" So I'm gonna put it up on YouTube. It'll be up on YouTube so people can check that out. So lots of fun stuff. You guys want to support us? Continue, continue the push for independent podcasters. Patreon.com/ITL Army, as we have pumped out 5 episodes for you this week. 5. Over 7 hours of content in 5 episodes. And we've got 2 more coming up next week. So come and support us. Patreon.com/ITL Army. It's going to be big in March. So let's get to this damn thing. Catchers, we don't love them. Relief pitchers, we got to have them. So let's rank and talk. Let's start with catchers.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says...
In this league.
Hey, Farva, what's the name of that restaurant you like with all the mozzarella sticks?
In this league.
Oh.
Catchers, Bogman, take the last one. Let's go to relievers.
All right, done. I mean, this is... We only rank 20 catchers here, and I honestly think that that's overkill. First of all, let's do a... just a service announcement, public service announcement. Just don't do 2 catchers in your league anymore. That is like old school fantasy baseball, and we don't need to be doing
it. Well, TGFBI, we're doing it.
I understand, but I would just say that I prefer non-2 catcher leagues. Anything I can do to not be in a 2 catcher league is what I want to do. Right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I 100% agree. I try to be, I know we're probably not always like this. I try to be cognizant of, like, everybody plays so many things different. And, like, someone got mad because, you know, we were joking about how stupid ALNL only are. And I'm not saying that it's dumb. What I think is dumb is where people tell us it's the only way to play. That's what I don't like. I don't like when people tell me that's the only way that you play fantasy is an AL or an NL, blah, 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 blah. I told you, I enjoy the AL-NL, but however you want to play is fine by me. I think a mixture is actually kind of maybe the most fun. I actually enjoy having lots of different ways to do it. But I will tell you, the thing I enjoy probably the least of anything in the world is 2 catcher. So I say all of that. It's probably at the very, very bottom of anything is having to draft 2 of these guys.
And the reason for that, honestly, is because it's so rare where you're going to get 2 good ones. 2 good ones that play a lot and put up enough stats to actually... give you value. You know, most of the time it's you draft one that's pretty good, and then the second guy that you draft is so bad that he is going to drag down your first catcher's value. So if you draft, you know, JT Realmuto first, and then you come back and you draft, you know, some loser, Roberto Perez, whoever it is, with your second, you know, the stats for him are so bad, they're almost going to negate the good stats from you.
It's not, you know, it's really interesting kind of talking about TGFBI for a minute. You know, when Gary Sanchez fell to me post 100, because I've always kind of had this, like, I'm not like crazy firm about it. I don't want to make it out like I'm crazy firm about it. But most catchers don't really justify, their value inside the top 100. It's rare. And JT Realmuto goes really high. So if you go post 100, I'm going to consider the elite guys, and Gary Sanchez was there. Once I did it, I considered coming back because I had the opportunity. I considered taking Yasmani Grandal with the next pick back and just being like, I didn't do it, by the way, but I considered being like, well, then I'll just have an absolute dominance at this position and that might kind of set me up a little bit. But I didn't ultimately end up doing it because the difference between catcher 15 and the catcher, the catcher 4, it's pretty minimal. It ends up being pretty, pretty minimal. And the amount of guys that we've picked up, like we picked up last year, that came in, look at this list here. I mean, guys like Garver, guys like Will Smith, Carson Kelly, Omar Navarez, Sean Murphy. All of those guys.
You saw these guys, Wilson Ramos, Roberto Perez, who was, he had 24 bombs, but he only hit 240. So there's some decent catchers, but it's just like you said, the difference between 4 and 20 is minimal. You know what I mean? So really 4 or 5, anyone after that, anyone after wherever you put Contreras, really, is just okay. You know what I mean? And this year is actually better than past years, I think, as far as catchers go. But it's still, I don't know. It's just not something that I like to do. I don't like drafting catchers. I wish there was something that we could do to make this better. Almost like, and I guess you could in a points league. Maybe you could even it out by giving them bonuses, kind of like how, Scott Fishbowl, you get.
And I hate that.
You get 1.5 points for tight ends. But I think the disparity in points between the regular position players is even bigger for catchers so than it is tight ends in football. So I like an idea of something like that. But I just don't want to have to draft two catchers. It's an annoying position.
Well, that's us just kind of reeling about the annoyance. That's fine.
Yes.
We do have to get them in some capacity. I would say there's a clear advantage to having a catch. I shouldn't even say that because then that makes it like you've got to do it. The top six catchers, I think, are all very close to each other. Then there's another tier of three. And then after that, you've gotten into a space where just wait. So I will never reach for a catcher. You just will never see it happen. Even in the two catcher format. Like I said, I was just surprised we were post 100 overall in a 15 team and only one catcher had gone in a two catcher league. So that's why I took Sanchez. One of the few circumstances. But you have to pay some decent prices this year for Mitch Garver. Salvador Perez, I think, is still a deal. But if I don't get one of those guys at a cost where, I don't know. I'm looking. I mean, God, dude, I'm talking myself into a circle where I want to say, like, I could find a reason why I would take Garver or I would take Contreras. But unless it's two catcher, I'm probably not. And I'm just going to wait because, like, here's a perfect example. Carson Kelly is someone that we both really like this year. I'm a little bit higher on him than you. He's going off as the 10th overall catcher. And I've got him inside of that. I know Kelly is somebody that I can have a backup plan for. Or, there's a few of these guys. Let's just get right into it because we're kind of not even going into the ranks. 20 through 11, this is relative. This is all very relative, I want to tell everybody. I've got Danny Jansen, Travis d'Arnaud, Jorge Alfaro, Yadier Molina, Wilson Ramos, top 15, Buster Posey, Tom Murphy, Robinson Chirinos, Francisco Mejia at 12, and Christian Vasquez at 11.
For me, I've got Kurt Suzuki at 20. Then I go Robinson Chirinos, Tom Murphy, Travis d'Arnaud, Roberto Perez, Jorge Alfaro at 15. Then Wilson Ramos, Omar Narvaez, Sean Murphy, and Carson Kelly at 11.
I'm probably, I'm torn on a couple one. Like, I have Mejia on here. You don't have Mejia. He's still going back and forth with Austin Hedges in camp. I saw both of them. Mejia looks a lot more primed. It's actually funny. The year before when I was in the backfields, Austin Hedges was working like really firmly with Mejia. This year, Mejia and Hedges both are working with guys like Luis Camposano and this guy Kyle Overstreet and a couple of these younger guys. Like, there's a lot more confidence in Mejia that he's going to be given more of an opportunity. But, am I going to go crazy? If I'm in a 12 team, I would consider taking Mejia because if he doesn't work out, I can just go pick up Jorge Alfaro or I can pick up Tom Murphy or something like that. In a 15, team, I'm probably going to drop him down a little bit. And a guy like Robinson Chirinos, who I have at 13, like Robinson Chirinos is always my backup plan. He's with the Rangers right now. Good hitting park. He is always my backup plan for a guy to, you know, maybe get me 20 homers late. And that's where the battle always is, dude. It's like, what does the catcher provide that's better than the other catchers? A lot of these guys are 20-plus homer bad average players, so you have to have a distinct advantage where a guy has not only the power and the batting average, and it's few and far between.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the main thing you want to do with taking a catcher or even a second catcher, which is kind of the area that we're in here, is get someone first and foremost that isn't going to hurt your team. That's why I don't have a guy like Danny Jansen in my top 20 catchers here. I mean, I like Danny Jansen, you know, but he hit 207 last year.
He's such a better hitter than that. Like he's way better than what you think.
He is, but everyone that I have in my top 20, the lowest batting average I think is Roberto Perez at 239. You know, so I want someone that's not going to drag down my batting average. So I don't want those boomer bust catchers like Danny Jansen, where he hits 200. So I want someone like that. But I'd rather take Francisco Mejia going back and forth with Austin Hedges, right, than a guy that's going to get 450 at bats and hit 210, hit 220, somewhere in that neighborhood. I don't want that. So that is what I'm trying to avoid for the most part at catcher, especially in these second halves. I like Tom Murphy, who I have at 18 over here, because not only did he hit 270 with 18 homers and only 76 games last season, but also because he's going to hit in the middle of the Mariners lineup, it seems like he's going to hit 5 or 6. So possibility to drive in runs here. I don't know that I necessarily really like anyone else in this area. I kind of like taking Tom Murphy, and he falls. So that's kind of be my goal in two catcher leagues or deeper leagues, like a 16-man one catcher. That's going to be the guy I probably try to target.
You know, I would say one guy I'm realizing that I might be a little bit more aggressive on now that I'm seeing it. I didn't even realize I didn't have him on here. Also because these guys don't fall in the top 300, so it gets a little skewed, is, you know, you have Kurt Suzuki on here. And Suzuki should be, you know, given a good shot in Washington. And last season, I just had his number, 17 homers, 63 RBIs in only 280 at-bats. You know, so offensively, it's there. He hit 264 as well. So if you could get Kurt Suzuki in a spot where he's pulling up like what James McCann did, you know, 440 plate appearances, probably be a 260, 270 hitter with 22 to 24 homers. So he actually might be another one of those good flyers late. You mentioned Tom Murphy. I mentioned Robinson Chirinos, who Chirinos last year, even though I was touting the 20, he missed some time, didn't get to the 20 homers. He had 17 homers last year with 58 RBIs, 57 runs. Do you know how many catchers had 20 homers last year?
They're like, I don't know, 5 or 6 at least, right?
8.
8? Okay, yeah.
So, do you know how many hit higher than 270?
2.
5.
5, really?
Five of them. The lowest guys were Gary Sanchez led all catchers with 34 homers, hit 232. Yasmani Grandal hit 28. He was third in homers. He hit 246. And Roberto Perez hit 239 with 24 homers. Everybody else hit 270 or higher. So there's a potential for a distinct advantage. Like, here's another guy who probably doesn't get quite enough love, and I've got him a little bit lower than you. It's like Christian Vasquez. Christian Vasquez hit 23 homers and a 276 batting average, 72 RBIs, which were fifth most at the catcher position. So he was in the top 8 in homers, top 5 in RBIs, and he had one of the better batting averages than anybody. So he's kind of one of those, you know, unheralded catching positions. But again, this is a guy that you can get in the 250s, so paying up prices. Like, I think you get Christian Vasquez stats, or how am I trying to say this? You get Yasmani Grandal stats with Vasquez 130 picks later.
Right, exactly. Which is why, you know, I really think the only guy worth reaching high for is Real Muto. And it's because he, like last year, he played 145 games. Same thing, Grandal played 153, but because they both can play catcher and first.
He ain't playing any first. I don't see why he would play a ton of first in Chicago, right? With Abreu and E5. Won't.
Yeah, yeah. With Abreu and E5, he probably won't. So you're right there. With Real Muto, he'll get time at first. And he had 275, and he stole almost 10 bases. He had 9 swipes. So, like, he does everything. So it's like tier one is Real Muto, then it's everybody else. Should we move up here?
Yeah, let's just go into the top 10. Give me your top 10.
All right, at 10, I've got Buster Posey, then Yadier Molina at 9, Christian Vasquez at 8, Salvador Perez at 7, Will Smith at 6, Contreras at 5, Mitch Garver at 4, Grandal 3, 2 Sanchez, and 1 Real Muto.
I've got Sean Murphy at 10, Omar Navarez at 9, Carson Kelly at 8, Will Smith at 7, followed by Salvador Perez, Mitch Garver, Wilson Contreras, Yasmani, Gary, and J2 Realmuto. The guys there's three players I'm most likely to own. It is Salvador Perez, because I believe Salvador Perez is coming at a deal. I want to say, I don't have the NFBC stuff up. I need to pull the early ADP data up. But he's one of those catchers that's going at a relatively cheap price. I'm not looking at draft champions here, but he's 161 overall at 159. And I believe that's, I don't know what catcher that is. All in a minute here, I'll look in.
He just went
February.
159 in my TGFBI draft.
Yeah, so like 150, and this is like a high. I mean, I remember a couple years ago when I was making the argument to not take Gary Sanchez and take Salvador Perez, because you get Gary Sanchez type power numbers from him. He's still a little banged up. He's been DHing, but as I've reported, I saw him doing like hardcore catcher drills in practices, like backfields alone with coaches. He's behind the plate. He's doing the stuff. So he's just not in games. Salvador Perez is someone I would own. The only problem is he costs in near the 150. The more likely is number one, Carson Kelly, who I want to own. Offensively, he's going to get all the run. Steven Vogt is the other guy here in Arizona. Carson Kelly is going to get all the offensive run, and then Omar Narvaez. That's another guy that I'm willing to bank on in Milwaukee.
I kind of like taking the old dudes, you know, like taking Posey and Molina, right? It, just because I know exactly what they're going to do. They are not going to hurt my team. You know, Posey's going to hit, I think, you know, 257 last year was a down year for him. He should do better than that. 270 for Molina. They're going to hit like 10 homers and drive in 50 runs, and they're just not going to sink me anywhere. So I kind of like taking the old guys. And I feel like there's always, you know, Posey. We're never going to see MVP Posey again, but there's still some meat left on the bone there for him to at least play better than he has been playing the last couple seasons. So if he comes in and he feels real healthy, we know he has it in him to have a great season. So don't think it'll happen, but that's why I like taking those guys, because I know they're not going to bottom out for me at all. So, and they're late. They're both going real late.
I want to own shares of Mitch Garver, but it's just not going to happen. Like Mitch last year, it was second in the league at catcher and homers with 31, only one of two catchers with 31 homers. He had 273 batting average, which was 40 points better than the guy above him at Gary Sanchez. Had a 365 OBP, which was about 45 points better OBP-wise. He had more runs. Only thing he didn't do better than Gary Sanchez were the couple homers and 10 RBIs. Mitch Garver was phenomenal there. He just costs. Like, he was free last year. He just costs. He's 114 is his ADP, but going off as the 109th player. Now, NFBC might be a little bit skewed with maybe more two catcher type of leagues, but he's someone I would love to own. Possesses really big power. He's a talented dude. I remember him 2017 in the fall league, and he ripped one in surprise practically to the gates. So it's there. I just don't believe in the batting average necessarily. And I'm going to look at what FanGraphs. I'm curious at, let's see, where is his stupid name?
Mitch Garver. Yeah, I mean, my thing with Garver is that you have to pay for him this year.
That's what I'm saying.
And that's why, you know, like you said, I'd like to own him, But I just don't see myself owning him in any league, you know, because this is the year you have to pay for him. I don't know that we're going to see another, and I wouldn't expect a Mitch Garver to pop up out of nowhere to hit 30 bombs. So,
well, the 30 bombs specifically is tough. By the way, his projections, most systems have him dropping pretty significant in batting average. 254 is the bat. 255 is ATC. Only one system has him over 20. That is ATC. Has him 21 homers. I should say over homers. 21 homers with 109 games, where everybody else is having him sub 100 games. So, you know, it's a heavy price to pay for a catcher like him. But if I were to say, you know, who are the guys that could pull off a Mitch Garver, and I'm going to more say it's like they really come onto the scene, not just hitting 30 homers. If you wanted a specific 30 homer guy, I think Jorge Alfaro is that guy. Jorge Alfaro has 30 plus home run power if he plays a full season. And there are some run producers in that lineup now. And the other guy, though, is, I think, Sean Murphy. Like, Sean Murphy is the 14th catcher on Fantasy Pros. Will go undrafted in lots of places. He is a power speed guy who I think probably, he actually might represent the closest skills to J2 Realmuto. So I think Sean Murphy's a guy that could jump up. But if you wanted a true one-for-one like Garver, I would call that Jorge Alfaro this year.
I like Tom Murphy as kind of a comparison as well, because Murphy kind of had that power pace as well. 18 bombs in 76 games. So, give him 120 games, 125 games, and let's see if he can push that up to 30. So, I mean, we'll see. You know, playing for the Mariners, might not see a lot of great pitches. So,
yeah.
But I think that that's a decent comparison as well.
And then just looking at, if you guys want, you know, some of the projections are looking at as far as catchers go, I'm just over on Steamer just to kind of taper things down. I mean, ATC is a pretty good one too, because as we've talked about with Ariel, and actually I'm going to use ATC for this. He's an aggregator. He aggregates all the projection systems. So looking at the aggregator here, Gary Sanchez, they've got with 32 homers, a 239 batting average, a 321 OBP. Yasmani Grandal is someone, if he just was a little bit cheaper, I'd be more interested in. They've got playing 139 games. I think that's the most at catcher, 24 homers with 72 RBIs. Carson Kelly is at 20 homers, which we like to see. And another interesting one who we haven't talked about is Will Smith. Will Smith, 22 homers on their projected, but only a 232 batting average. So, you know, kind of taking a pretty big hit after he was, he finished a year as essentially a top five catcher in fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, I hate these goddamn catchers so much. Can we be done with catchers? Can I be excused, the Welsh?
Oh, you can. Yeah, I mean, you know, draft them later, pay adequate prices. I would lastly say, I don't know how much of a real advantage you get if you get the top end guys. Like, some people like to look at it like, oh, I got, you know, I'm much better than the crowd. Maybe if you get Realmuto. But after that, even to Sanchez down to Omar Narváez, I'm not sure that there is a crazy, crazy, crazy difference. There is a power one with Gary Sanchez, but, you know, Narváez in Milwaukee, Look at what Yasmani Grandal did. I think Narváez is a 20-plus homer guy. I think Carson Kelly's a 20-plus homer guy. So instead of paying for, like, Wilson Contreras and Mitch Garver, I'm going to go down here and pay for Kelly and Narváez.
And I think, you know, just a good process to look at the two catcher leagues and things of that nature is just look at where Realmuto or Garver or Sanchez went, right? And then look at another team. If you're just looking at a different board, look at where another team, who they took in that same round where Realmuto went, and then where they took their first catcher. Like, I'll just give you a for instance here. The team 14, I won't even give out names here, in this league.
Is this TGFBI?
TGFBI. Garver went in round 7. Okay.
Wow.
So round 7 and then round 11, the same person that took Garver took Robbie Ray. So you have Garver and Ray with your 7th and 11th picks. If you look at round 7 for this team 14, he took Joey Gallo in round 7 and then took Salvador Perez in team 11 in round 11. So just flat out looking at a 2-for-2, would you rather have Gallo and Perez or Ray and Garver?
Yeah, I mean, Gallo.
Gallo and Perez by a million miles.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to me, it's just, you know, just wait to take a catcher.
You can stream him.
You really can.
Here's the last bit on it. If you're in a two catcher league or you're in a 15 or more, be cognizant of your catchers. If you're in a 10, a 12, I mean, a single 15 team roto, I'm probably still not going to even be that cognizant of it because, you know, if I take the last guy, I'm still taking a Tom Murphy or a Chirinos or a Jorge Alfaro. So it's got to be, you know, 15 plus single catcher leagues or two catcher leagues is where I'm going to care. Otherwise, just follow the boards and, you know, don't talk yourself out of really good players, you know, by taking Wilson Contreras or something like that, because you're going to be happy with the teams you construct, even with Christian Vasquez as your catcher.
Right. And the reason we didn't talk a lot of highs and lows as far as ranks go in catchers is because they are wild.
Yeah.
They are wildly high and wildly low on like every single guy. We're low on Wilson Ramos just because, you know, I think we're both not really buying into him hitting 280 again. So, you know, we're both low on him. But other than that, we're right in the range because the range, like Perez, is between 15 and 37. You know, Sean Murphy's between 8 and 23. You just see just a crazy wide range on these catchers because people just value them differently because you just never know who's going to break out. So stream them. Don't spend a lot of, you know, auction money or draft capital on a catcher. That would be my suggestion.
Closing time.
In this league.
Somebody royally forked up. Somebody forked up. Why can't I say fork?
If you're trying to curse, you can't hear.
It's full shirt.
Holy mother forking shirt boss.
All right, let's talk about some closers here. Always it's not like the catcher situation, but it's always a debate of when do you take them? Do you want to be the first bullet? Do you want to double tap? I mean, really, you know, the idea of getting too early is probably based on where you're drafting at. Do you want a bottom feed? Because there's a, you know, has always been a very, very deep conversation about don't pay for closers. You know, get them on the back end. You can stream them. You can spend your fab dollars on them. You can take another popular strategy is just not bothering and taking the next potential guys. And it's a thin line, you know, because this bottom end of closers is not very sexy. Now, it doesn't mean you're not going to get saves from them, but it is not very sexy here. So we'll intertwine what our strategy is, but let's go. Why don't you give me your 30 to 20 bogs or 30 to 21 technically?
30 to 21 for me is Daniel Hudson at 30, then Tony Watson at 29, Brandon Kinsler at 28, Hirano at 27. Then I go Will Smith, Giovanni Gallegos, Joe Jimenez, Keone Kella, Nick Anderson, and Sean Doolittle at 21.
I've got Matt McGill, Jimmy McGill at 30, Michael Givens at 29, Wade Davis, Brandon Kinsler, Keone Kella, Joe Jimenez, Ian Kennedy, Alex Colomay, Mark Melanson, and a Gallegos far, far away. I am struggling my ass off speaking today. What the hell is going on with me?
His name is impossible, and I don't know how much longer we're going to have to worry about him because he got blown up yesterday in spring training.
I wonder if they don't.
World star.
I wonder if they don't have a spot, if they don't want him there, and they don't have a spot for Alex Reyes if they would make that move.
I would not be surprised even a little bit if that was how they went into the season. And that's why I'm low on Gallegos. I got him at 25. I guess I'm not low on him because his average is 24, but high of 14, low of 38, and a couple more bad spring training performances, and he's going to be moving lower and lower and lower. Man.
Someone I'm going to bring up a little bit, but I don't think he's going to crack. Might crack the top 20 is Alex Colomay. You have a lot higher, and I don't blame you. And it's actually probably a oversight on my part. Is Colomay is not the most exciting catcher in the world, but he is on a team that has some pitchers that can go deeper into games, and they're pressing. This is an all-in time. It's a big all-in time.
I feel like you take him in mocks, too.
Yeah, right? And I do. You're 100% right. This is one of those instances where, you know, we do our ranks. You don't necessarily poke them against each other. And then when you see the positional stuff, you make some of the adjustments. And this is an adjustment I want to make. Like, do I want him over Brandon Workman? Still not sure about that. I'm not a big Will Smith guy in Atlanta because people are paying the price. They're speculatively paying a price for Will Smith because he's better, but he doesn't have the gig. Where I would rather, even if like Will Smith is ranked higher or thought of as higher, I would rather have Alex Colomay over him at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I moved. Someone has Will Smith ranked 7 among closers.
That's crazy.
And that, you know what? I can get behind that if he was walking into the season with the closer.
Well,
shirt.
I 1,000% agree with that. If he had the job, this is a whole different conversation. But what people are doing is they're not wanting to miss. Like, they're just being like, well, listen, talent's going to oversee all of this. Like, don't worry about that. He's the most talented player. He'll have it. I don't know, man.
How many times have people taken the dude behind Fernando Rodney? You know what I mean?
Totally.
Oh, he's going to lose that job. And then he closes for the whole damn year. It's the same situation. I don't like walking into the season. It's the same thing with the IL. I don't like walking into the season with a guy that doesn't have the job yet when you're in a saves-only league. You know, I just refuse to do that nonsense because it's bad for business. You know, maybe Will Smith gets the job a week into the season. Maybe Mark Melanza blows 2 or 3 saves in the first 7 games, and then he's ousted, and here comes Will Smith, and we found him for the entire season. That's just not the way it works most of the time. So if the guy doesn't have the job, I don't want anything to do with him for the most part.
Any other guys in here? I mean, there's a lot of players, to be honest with you. Like, if you want to bottom feed for saves, you know, Matt McGill or Yoshi Hirano, you know, McGill might currently have it. Hirano might be the favorite. Michael Givens. I mean, when you've missed on everything, or let's say you've gotten 2 and you've you know, kind of forgot about it for a bit, the guys that you're going to be poking around are Kinsler, Wade Davis, who has been tapped the Rockies closer, not Oberg, Michael Givens. Those are the last-ditch effort players. And there's a few other maybe little speculative ones out there. I mean, if you had to pick one of those, I guess you're going with Hirano because you have him highest.
Yeah, I mean, and apparently I'm higher than anyone on Hirano. I think that'll change. I think a lot of people are starting to move his way, but I'm not confident in Hirano at all. What I want for the most part is I want to get 3 closers who are not expected to have someone contend with them for the job, right?
Okay.
You can sit there and say no one's going to push whoever, but I want 3 closers that are going to have the job locked up, and then I want to throw darts at the end. So that's Hirano, Kinsler, Watson, Hudson, whoever you like out of those guys at the end. Take one of them at the very end just to see if it works out, because then you have 4 closers and you're sitting pretty as far as saves.
I think it's very likely I'm probably going to own someone in this very bottom class. Like, I'm not typically somebody
you
that...
should.
Yeah, but I mean, what ends up happening, though, is if, let's say you're a double tapper. Let's say you go get, Hendricks, and then you get Taylor Rogers.
Jansen. That's what I just did in TGFBI.
Okay, sure.
I did Hendricks and Jansen.
And then if you're in that space, you might be more likely to then maybe you grab a Hansel Robles or Brandon Workman, and then you're out of it because you want to continue your dominance at the position. When you get into this category, this is probably more like, all right, you got Raisel Iglesias, and then later you got Alex Colomay, and then now you're just trying to get one more, and you're just hoping, all right, well, I'll go Wade Davis, or I'll go Michael Givens. I mean, I just have a feeling that's probably what I'm going to do more. I'm not going to own the Josh Haders of the world because they cost really high. Would I like to? Sure. But the top 4 closers probably are out of my peripheral, so I'm going to have I'm just jumping into strategy. I'll probably own maybe a top 10, like a 9 or 10, then I'll own probably like a late teens guy, and then I'll own a late 20s guy. That's probably the setup of my closers.
Yeah, and I just like to have one more. That's all. As I like to have 3 and then throw a dart and see if the dart throw is going to stick. You know, usually it doesn't. Last year it actually worked for you because your dart throw was Archie Bradley, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then, he had his struggles, and he had the job taken away from him for a little bit and stuff. So he was a pain in the ass.
I had another one. I'm trying to remember. I had another one that paid off, and then I had one that did not pay off. But I owned 1 million shares of one dude who was garbage, and then one absolutely paid off with Archie.
Yeah,
I had
Jose Urena in a bunch of leagues last year.
Yeah.
And the year before that, Juan Manaya. Like, these guys don't always work out, but it never hurts. Like, if Hirano's your guy or Matt McGill, whoever you think is winning the Mariners job, just throw the dart. It doesn't like, you don't have to hang your head in shame if you took a guy at the last round. Who cares? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
You know who I'm one I'm not too shamed on? I think, like, I know Wade Davis is, we all LOL, but like,
he's a closer.
Pick a team, though. Pick a team of Royals, Tigers, Pirates, Marlins, Rockies, Orioles, and Mariners. What's the team that's most likely to get wins out of that? It's Wade Davis. Now, if he's garbage, it doesn't matter. But there's just not, like, I would like to, I will speculate on bad closers with good teams more than anything else. Like, that's
I just hate that. I hate the Rocky situation. It's less about, the wins at that point, and it's about when Wade Davis blew up last year, his ERA was 8.
Yeah.
You know, he ruins weeks.
I think Mark Melanson is a really good cheap option right now. Fantasy Pros, they have him as the 32nd closer because everybody presumes Will Smith has the job, who is at 28. And I'm not so sure that's necessarily the case. I've even made an adjustment here. I've got Colomé now at my 20 and Will Smith below him at 21. So that was an adjustment I've made mid-episode. But I think Melanson, like, where I could speculate on Will Smith in that realm, like, Melanson has a job. Like, he's going to go in with the gig. And I don't think it's crazy to think that he can't hold on to this one. Atlanta has a great offense. They've got pitchers that can, you know, bring it to the seventh or something like that. They've got their setup guys in Green and Will Smith. And then you throw it over to Melanson. Melanson might pull down 35 saves this year.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people are forgetting in that Will Smith-Melanson thing is that a lot of teams are using their best relief pitcher as the guy in any spot to get them out of a tough jam, to get them out of, you know, having two guys on and all that stuff. So I think that Will Smith will kind of be reserved for those situations. And then Melanson comes on for the ninth most of the time, with Will Smith getting a save here or there when the ninth is the hardest inning for them. But I think that Melanson, for the most part, is going to get the ninth. You know, would it be surprising to see him lose the job? No. I mean, I watched him lose a closing gig on opening day when the D-backs came back and beat the Giants on opening day a couple years back. So it wouldn't be surprising to see him lose it, but he's walking in the season with it unless he performs terribly in spring. So you're absolutely right. And I have him higher than anybody else because I put him at 20. And his high on Fantasy Pros is 23, but I expect that to move.
I'm actually also higher than the high on Fantasy Pros. I have a 22, so you're still a little bit higher on him. Otherwise, you know, Ian Kennedy, he was so great last year because he was this free bet. That was the guy, Boggs, I think. I think it was Ian Kennedy that I had lots of shares of. Joe Jimenez, I'm still not necessarily sold on. Keone Kella, these are all just really dicey,
these
cheap
are just the
ass
expected
saves.
To have the job going into the season,
yeah.
But you don't have confidence in them.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
You don't have confidence in any closer, really.
Where you have confidence is this area where, you know, where you're probably going to be investing more of your saves, and this is this 20 to 11 range. So at 20, I'm just going to go 20 to 11. I got Brandon Workman. Archie Bradley's at 19, but technically those two have both moved up because I moved Will Smith off, who was at 18. Nick Anderson at 17, Hansel Robles at 16, followed by Jose Leclerc, Sean Doolittle, Hector Neris, Raisel Iglesias, and Taylor Rogers at 11.
For me, I've got Melanson at 20, then I've got Archie Bradley at 19, Jose Leclerc at 18, then Ian Kennedy at 17, Brandon Workman, hook 'em, at 16, Alex Colomé at 15, Hansel Robles at 14, Neris, Iglesias, and Kimbrel, my 13 to 11 to round it out here.
So who do you want to hit on this range? Who's one for you?
Well, I think we have to start with Archie because the highest Fantasy Pro rank is 20. We are both 19 on him, and it sounds like a total homer move, and I couldn't believe when I was putting this together, I'm like, how am I the exact same as the Welsh?
Hey, Bogman.
Archie Bradley.
Go Spooners.
It's sickening to me, for sure.
Someone asked him, when I was over there, someone said, hey, Archie, you the closer this year? And he was really weirdly nonchalant about it. He was kind of like, he wouldn't say, like, yep, I am. He's just like, well, you know, I just want to get out there and, you know, do what I can, and hopefully I get it. And then everyone was kind of staring at him. He's like, but I want to be it because it does pay a lot better. So he was kind of joking about that. Archie's primed. The problem with him has always been consistency. I think you and I were walking up to the stadium, and because I had just given you the ball and we were talking about Archie and you were just like, you know, Archie can be good, because I was giving you crap, and you're just like, Archie can be good when that knuckle, you know, that knuckle curve is there. And I said, okay, well, that is, but that is ultimately his problem. You can't be a two-pitch pitcher with an inconsistent of one of those pitches, be inconsistent on one of those pitches. If you're going to only have two pitches, you need to be on both of them. So I wish the guy could either figure out that thing working better or develop another pitch that he can go to, because that's why, like, if he buzzed that fastball down the middle, people are going to just start crushing it. And he has seemed to have a bad pitch selection as well when going in to those later innings. So he's had a lot of time to work on it, and I'm hoping the change is there. And the Diamondbacks are going to be have the potential to pile on some wins this year. They're in a win-now mode with a great pitching staff that's going to bring it to them. And they brought in, you know, some Junior Guerra and, Hector Rondon, you know, some more power pitchers that they can, so that they can take it to Archie to put him in a good spot. So I think Archie's got a really decent shot at pulling in 30 plus saves this year and holding it, as long as he doesn't get all weirdly inconsistent.
Right. And that's the same thing I think. And I think that when you talk about the analytics movement and stuff, and the Diamondbacks being a big part of that, because with the Towers and Dave Stewart, they're like, well, we're not into analytics. And it didn't work at all, so they took the opposite approach. And what Torrey wants to do is he wants his best pitcher in those high-leverage situations, and that's why they signed Junior Guerra to be the best pitcher. So I think he's going to get those high-leverage situations. Archie's going to get the ninth. And
it's going to go to Junior,
like
though.
Like you said, pile up saves.
It's going to go to Junior, though, if Archie starts blowing him.
Yeah. If Archie really starts choking, then it will definitely go to Junior or even someone else. I mean, Jimmy Scherfey has a lot of promise as well still. So there's other options there, but I think Bradley starts the year as exclusively the closer, and we'll see if he finishes with it. So it'll be interesting.
One of the guys that has the potential to be, if you wanted, like, hey, who's a guy outside the top 10, you know, or if you wanted to go further down outside the top 15, that could be a top 10 guy. I believe that's Nick Anderson. Nick Anderson is one of those guys, if he had the full go, he would, it's fair to say, like a Josh Hader type. You know, remember Josh Hader was like going in the 10s or 15 of relievers, and then once it was like his gig, we consider him as the number one. Nick Anderson has number one, you know, top 10, top five closer potential in him. Last year, he had a 3.32 ERA, but a 2.4 xFIP, had a 15 plus K per nine bogs, 15 plus in 68 games. He had 110 strikeouts in 65 innings, and he walked 18 batters total. Better xFIP, high strikeouts. Walk per nine was, it was fine. He had a 41, check this out. This is what you're going to love, Boggs. A 41.7% K percentage and a 6.8% walk percentage. So his K to walk percentage was 34.9. Also a 19.3 swinging strike percentage. This guy gets strikeouts. He is exactly the type of closer you want. He just needs the situation. So I have him higher than you. I've got him at 17. He is someone I want to speculate on. We just don't have a for sure. I know he's listed most places as the closer, but they might go committee with Diego Castillo and Jose Alvarado. But if I can get Nick Anderson on the cheapish still, you know, bottom 15 of closers, I think I'm going to make an investment because his peripherals are very, very nice.
Yeah, as far as a pitcher goes, he's one of the best in this group. Then I don't think there's much question about that. Like you said, the 15 K per nine, the only two guys higher than him were Edwin Diaz and Josh Hader. That's it.
Love it.
As far as K per nine. So he's got that. It's just that the reason I have him low ranked here is because he's a Ray.
There's no guarantees.
It's all situational with the Rays. Every single spot in the lineup, including the starters, are all situational. So I just don't like the fact that that's kind of what their whole process is. So some days he's going to get the saves. Some days he's going to go in there in the tougher spots. And I would think that he leads this team in saves by a wide margin. but it's just not guaranteed. So I love Nick Anderson, the pitcher. I don't necessarily care for the situation. That's why I would take a guy like Ian Kennedy over him, even though he's such a better pitcher than Ian Kennedy, just because I know Kennedy gets the ninth and he's going to get the saves for the Royals.
I don't know if this is an interesting one. I don't know if the bat just doesn't care that there's a possibility of closing. The bat doesn't project him with any saves, and I don't know the underlining behind that. I'd be curious from Cardi. I might even hit him up. But ATC has him projected at 22 saves this year.
That'd be great.
Yeah, which would be fantastic at a 13K. It's essentially like almost everybody has him right around the 90-ish strikeout range, and the other projection's about 20. So 20 saves. That's something, you know, you can speculate on really late, and I believe Nick Anderson is going, let's look here, 223. You know, he's going after Emilio. He's still going after Emilio Pagan, which people are still taking Emilio Pagan high in draft.
I don't understand.
I don't either. Why? I don't get it.
I think it's just because they don't know that he's not closing. So
I mean, do they think they're going to trade away Kirby Yates and Pagan is going to jump in?
I have no idea. I don't know. So,
dude, real quick, you're right. Just Drew Pomeranz, he is probably one of the best setup men in baseball right now. And Andrés Muñoz is the future closer of this team as well. He was out pumping 100 on the backfields the other day and had 30 people watching him in the organization. They love Muñoz. So I don't get the Emilio Pagan love still. Like, sure, if Yates got hurt, they probably go to Pagan first off.
It's only because his ADP was high because he was.
People aren't paying attention.
Well, not because people weren't paying attention, but when they were drafting, he was still on the Rays and he was presumed to be the closer. I know I thought Pagan was going to be the closer until they traded him. So I think that plus his ADP is high, so people get stuck in a relief pitcher spot and they go, I don't know, I'll take this guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they don't know that he
don't
has moved.
Take it. He's so if he had the job, he would be great, but he doesn't. Yeah. Like Nick Anderson, like I, you know what I ended up doing, dude? I kind of flipped. Like I had Emilio Pagan pretty high. I put Nick Anderson in that spot and then dropped him down just a little bit. Like I think I had Pagan at one time at 15 or 14. So what I did was I said, well, Leclerc and Robles are more consistent and more trustable, so I'm going to have them above. But then I just essentially put Nick Anderson in his spot, sans a couple spots, because Anderson could absolutely be that guy. But I don't blame you. Like it seems like if you're going to invest in closers, you just want more consistency. You don't want to play the guessing game, where I'm willing to guess a little bit, because Anderson, if he has 35 saves, he's going to probably have 100 strikeouts. We're going to be viewing him, you know, probably he'll probably be more valuable than a Craig Kimbrell or I think a Liam Hendricks or Ken Giles.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely could be, but anybody else here that you like? You have Sean Doolittle fairly high for a guy that's in a, kind of co-closer situation there.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of the co-closer spot, but I just still think Doolittle is the guy. You know, they like Daniel Hudson, they really fell in love with and they gave him a bunch of money. But if Daniel Hudson kind of gets back to the old D Huddy that we used to see in Arizona, I think we'll go back to being fine with Sean Doolittle. So it's a fair point. He's a little bit of a question mark, but you know what? I got kind of some question marks in this middle range anyways, you know?
You know what? It's a good point to make because Hansel Robles, I think he's only had one outing.
They did say he's the guy, though. But they did say he's the guy.
He's the closer right now, but I mean, how safe is that job? That was the point. I think you missed a show with Joe and I when we did relief pitchers on the Black Book, and he was like, well, just how safe is Hansel Robles? I just don't think he's that safe. That's a good point to make. And the rest of these guys, too. Workman isn't completely proven, you know, but the Red Sox should win a decent amount of games, so I kind of like him. You know, Archie, we just talked about, and Nick Anderson is in a committee situation. So and Leclerc lost his job last year. Like Doolittle lost it, but it was because he was banged up. So I'm with you. Everyone else below Doolittle on your list is absolutely questionable.
And I'm a little bit low, just a tad bit lower on some of the guys that took massive bumps up last year. You know, like you have Taylor Rogers in this next area. I've got him at 11. I dig him. You know, what he put together last year, there's some question. Like, okay, here's a better way to put it. I'm talking myself in circles. I have a hard time, and this has been consistent with me for years, of paying the big prices for closers that are complete pop-ups, and their stuff doesn't equate to their production. So perfect example is Liam Hendricks and Taylor Rogers are those two exact players that, you know, they cost pretty heavy. Like Taylor Rogers is going as the eighth or averaging as the eighth closer. Someone has him at four. Liam Hendricks, you know, he was awesome last year, but he is consensus five. The high is five. His average is five. I have him at eight. I don't want to pay those prices where I'm more comfortable with, you know, like a Ken Giles or, you know, some of the old, you know, Kimbrel. Some the old consistent ones, Kimbrel, Jansen, and particularly, you know, another guy I'll tell you who's going to be a major target of mine, where I don't want to, you know what, the more I look at this, I don't like this range. I don't love this range at all because there's question marks and there's guys that I am lowering their value that I'm probably not going to get. Like I'm lowering Taylor Rogers' value. I guess I'm appropriate on Rice Iglesias. It's just not the greatest area, but unfortunately it's probably where I'm going to be fishing from.
I mean, the reason that I like Taylor Rogers and, you know, I would draft him in the spot that I have him is because the Twins have been looking for a closer for so long. And it's just it's been ugly for them for a while. And they finally got it with Rogers last year. Like he was finally the, kind of the solution to the problems that they've been having. So, you know, he's getting the first run at that.
He is.
Job.
I mean, they brought in Romo if something goes wrong. And, you know, that's if anything, just
he
a setup
experience.
Guy.
But you don't want to close with Romo. Closing with Romo is the same thing as having Fernando Rodney as your closer, right?
Yeah.
It's this is the guy because he's a veteran until we teach someone or find someone that is much, much better than this.
Well, and also, you know, taking if you want to take the adage of the team and team support, not that, you know, there's that many closers I have above him that aren't also on decent teams. But I think there's an argument where Taylor Rogers feels better than Liam Hendricks. You know what I mean? Like Taylor Rogers is going to be on a really big, powerful offensive team that is going to be trying to stack wins and they're going to be turning it over to him. You know, they're going to be in those games. So if you want to make the argument of Taylor Rogers makes more sense than a Brad Hand who might struggle with wins in the Indians, Ken Giles, I get that. I guess I just don't have I'm not fully bought in, so I just don't want to pay the big prices. And that's always something it's lame. I hate it. It happens with catchers and it happens with closers where, you know, the one pop-up season, then all of a sudden the prices go through the effing roof. And last year, if you paid the top two closers, the Blake Treinen and Edwin Diaz, you got your ass, I mean, you got your ass handed to you in the closer department. If you had just waited in the middle rounds and took Roberto Ozuna or, you know, anybody else, not taking Craig Kimbrel like me. And it really, I mean, look at those two guys we just mentioned, Hendricks and Rogers. Those guys were fodder to pick up, and they're top 10 closers now with people. And that's why there's always going to be those players that are sitting out there, and that's why I keep saying Nick Anderson might be that one guy. Do you want to go top 10?
Let's go top 10.
All right, you want to hit him?
Yeah, here we go. My top 10 goes like this. 10 is Giles, 9 Edwin Diaz, 8 Brad Hand, 7 Taylor Rogers, 6 Kenley, 5 Liam Hendricks, 4 Roberto Ozuna, 3 Chapman, 2 Yates, and Hader is 1.
I've got Brad Hand at 10, followed by Ken Giles, Liam Hendricks, Craig Kimbrel, Edwin Diaz at 6, Kenley Jansen at 5, Roberto Ozuna, Chapman, Yates, and Hader. So our top 4 is exactly the same. Edwin Diaz is the player that I probably am going to own all over the place. I think I want to own him everywhere because I still think the peripherals are at the top. I mean, you talked about the strikeout numbers. They're still there. They're big. I think there's a little bit of a raw deal last year. I mean, he just got outside of himself. He doesn't cost the top 100 in closers. Those pitchers in New York are going to be handing off to him. He's going to get all the opportunity, though. There's an argument to say if he starts to fail, they can go back to Seth Lugo, and I hear that. But I'm still a believer in Edwin Diaz, and he goes off around 122 overall. So Edwin Diaz is very likely to be my number one closer. I have it 6. He's going off as the 9th closer. It's him, or I guess I would also tell you Kenley Jansen, who I'm still, you know, he was out of Driveline early this offseason, which is fantastic. I'd love to hear that. And I still firmly believe in his stuff. So I'm post-hype, whatever you would call Diaz and Jansen. These are my two biggest targets inside the top 10 for closers.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Jansen on, you know, the Dodgers. Dodgers are going to win a million games this year, and he's the 9th inning guy. So I know he has had heart, you know, cardiac issues and other stuff going on where he's kind of been up and down, but he's the closer. They're going to win 100 games, so love taking chance on 100%. Edwin Diaz, I'm a little nervous on him, a little more nervous, just because last year was so bad, and they've said that he is in a competition this spring, which is kind of unbelievable because his stuff is just so much better than Lugo, and Lugo is hurt. He has a toe injury, and he, like, I think he's throwing batting practice for the first time coming up this weekend on Saturday or Sunday or something, so he hasn't gotten into games yet. But first appearance out for Edwin Diaz. He gives up 3 hits and 2 runs in 1 inning. So I hate to see that stuff. So he just makes me a little nervous because last year was so terrible. But I probably won't get him many times because you're taking him and you're in the leagues, a lot of leagues with me, but I do like taking him as well.
I
love starting the run. I like,
yeah, that's your favorite thing on the planet. Like, I know you always, like, you don't love the wheel sometimes while also loving it, but having the potential to, I think when you think about it, you're like, oh man, I'm 15, all right, this is gonna be, but then you're in it and you realize, well, when I want to do something, I get to start the whole thing and I get to make the full commitment, whether it was a 2-catcher, 2-closer, you want to get double speed, double power on the wheel, you get to do that.
I've done it twice in TGFBI already. That turn is I doubled up on closers with Hendricks and Jansen. So I started a big closer run, and then I did it with speed with Whit and Laureano as well. So it's a big advantage of being on the end. But even if I'm not on the end, I kind of like starting the run of taking Hader and Yates because they're just so safe. You know,
yeah.
And none of these guys after, like, I think after you get down to 4 at Roberto Osuna, I don't know, like, everyone else is, there's fairly safe, and then there's safe-ish, and then there's not safe at all. But there's not, like, locks.
I'd almost disagree. Like, I actually think there's tiers inside of these guys, but I would say 11-1. There's a similarity where I don't want to pay the crazy price because, you know, Hader has also been messed around with in Milwaukee. They've put him in different leverage situations. There's nothing that says that doesn't happen again. Yates, it's pretty hard to argue Yates' consistency. Chapman is in a little bit more of a funk with the pitching that they've lost. But I don't see crazy gaps between all of them where I think there might be some questions. Like Craig Kimbrell might have maybe more questions than anybody in this range. I mean, you don't even have him in your top 10, and I would agree that, yeah, there's definitely some bigger question marks, and Edwin Diaz as well. But, you know, Diaz has still got those crazy, crazy high strikeout numbers. I think 39% K percentage, which is, you know, that's why also I was touting Nick Anderson. Nick Anderson had even better. When these guys still have the peripherals, I'm in on it. And even though you might have some diminishing talents, like Kenley Jansen's talents might be diminishing a little bit, it's positive to go in here that they're working on their stuff, like at a place like Driveline, and there's just so much run support on them. I just don't see an insane difference. Like, closers are a weird situation, Bogman, to talk about. Like, when you're talking about pitchers were, you know, we're going to go through the motions and be like, all right, you know, XFIP to ERA, and we're going to say how long, you know, when is he getting beat up in the you know, in the lineup? Is it third way through the lineup? He's only going 5. He's not getting quality starts. You can have closers that are subpar that just keep locking down the door. And there could be 3 players that have better stuff behind them. But sometimes it is literally just about opening opportunity. That's why Melanson makes sense over Will Smith. Will Smith is a better pitcher, but Melanson might be just good enough to hold down the job, so they have no reason to go away. So I'm coming back. The reason I'm saying this is that there's a lot of, like, extra peripherals we could talk about. We can get into swing and strike percentage, and we could talk about, you know, the crazy offerings and, oh, this slider gets this much of a swing percentage. But sometimes it's literally about opportunity and being able to hold it.
Relief pitchers in a regular 5x5 are about saves first. They're just about saves first. That's why, you know, when Josh Hader wasn't getting saves, even though he was one of the best pitchers, he was still going around 9 or 10 last year when he wasn't guaranteed saves. And that's kind of the same deal with Nick Anderson.
Yeah.
Nick Anderson is low because he's not guaranteed saves. He's probably going to get them, but he's not on a team that's going to win 100 games, and he is in a spot where they're going to move him around. So, but you know, you're absolutely right, Welsh. You know, we love the stuff, and we can get into talking about the high K rates and all that stuff, which is why these guys at the top are at the top. But it's also why they've held the job for so long.
Well, and I'd also say
you guys have that stuff. You know,
one of the differentiating factors that I might take in is, like, I care about opportunity, and if they're given the opportunity to start, they're on a team. I mean, obviously, they can let it go. You know, in Colorado, it's easy for things to get away from a pitcher and they can disappear. But they're on a team that's going to put them in a situation for a lot of saves, and they have the job. I think that is key number one, and you can break into all the possible stuff you want. You could talk about how much you hate Craig Kimbrell, but guess what? Cubs are going to be in a position to win games. He's the guy. They spent the money. I'm good. The other territory to go with is making sure that you're adding on to your other categories, and that really comes down to K's. You know, obviously, you don't want a relief pitcher that's carrying a big ERA like Edwin Diaz, but at the end of the day, you're not going to dump him because he's still getting you your saves, but your strikeouts are where you can go and hunt, and that's where you might want to end up looking and maybe prioritizing, you know, high K per nine, high K percentage guys. Like I said, Edwin Diaz is projected with the second highest K per nine this coming year. Aroldis Chapman, 13 on Steamer, 13.14. You're going to have, Nick Anderson, I think, is in the 12s. And then you can always go and speculate. Like, one guy who's an interesting speculative ad if Brad Hand gets traded is James Karinchak, who I saw pitch yesterday and was dropping curveballs everywhere. He's projected with a 12.68 K per nine. So very, very much on the high end. So if you can get yourself just into the spot to draft opportunity and get your saves, you can also start thinking about the high strikeout guys. And that's why Edwin Diaz, even Craig Kimbrell, still to that point, can be exciting. I want those high K, give me 100 Ks for my reliever type of guy.
Yeah, and I mean, just looking at last year, Welsh, I mean, you don't even have to have guys that are on good teams, because look at some of these leaders. Ian Kennedy had 30 saves. The Royals only won 59 games. How many games did the Padres win last year? I'm trying to look that up. And Kirby Yates had 40 saves on the Padres, 70 wins, and he had 41 saves. So you don't have to have 100 saves for a guy to get 40, or 100 wins to have a guy get 40 saves. It's just you need that guy to be consistent. The high strikeout guys are more consistent. They keep their jobs longer. That's why they're safer. But, you know, you don't have to be good. You can be get that opportunity, like you mentioned, even on a crappy team, and you can go out there and put up a pile up the saves without problems.
And I think lastly, if you could just get yourself, maybe even mentally think of it like this with closers, it's great to have Kirby Yates. It's great to have Hader. It's great to have those guys as much as you possibly can. Those guys specifically, they were a couple of the few closers that actually got really high end strikeouts. Of the guys that had 20 or more saves, only three closers had 100 plus strikeouts. That was Hader, Yates, and Liam Hendricks, who was a baller last year. So you want those high end strikeouts. But if you can go in thinking, I need three closers that can get me 25 saves apiece, if you can go in and do that, you can get into a space where, you know, maybe you take the high end guy and you know they're a 30 in the 30 range, but you can get, you know, Hansel Robles last year had 23 saves. And if he's a closer this year, you probably get 23 to 25. Same thing with guys like Hector Neris that are undervalued. Alex Colome, who we talked about. Ian Kennedy had 30. 11 guys had 30 saves or more last year. And some of the names of those guys were not drafted. Will Smith, Colome, I mean, maybe Colome at the very end. Ian Kennedy, those guys were not drafted in a lot of places. So you're going to be able to pick up saves. Try to get 25 saves from three closers. That'll put you in a pretty big spot. And if you can get more on it, fantastic. Pick your spots. I say don't crazy overpay, but I'm also not someone that says don't draft them at all and just try to play the waiver wire, because everybody else is doing the same thing. Get yourself. You like to double tap early. I think it's safe to say Bogman likes to have two top 10 closers. I like to have a 10, a 15, and a 25.
You're Goldilocks. You're taking one from each.
Yes.
Each break there. One of 10, one of 20, and one of 30.
Yeah. That's give bad. Me like one between 9 and 12, and then one between like 15 and 18, and then one between 25 plus, somewhere in that range. And I think it's the perfect price that you end up paying that doesn't set you apart by leaving other positions. And ironically,
I like two top tens, Archie Bradley and another loser. And another That's loser. What I like.
Amazingly, we just spent an hour 30. I can't speak about it. Hell Week has absolutely destroyed me. It has literally destroyed my brain. I think I'm done. I think I'm done forever. It's over.
Well, it's over with. We're done with Hell Week. Yeah. We appreciate you guys listening to this episode. If you're still here,
oh my God,
and for all the episodes this week, thank you very much, everybody. Hell Week is done.
Five. Hope you guys enjoyed it. You guys want to show your support or your enjoyment or your love or whatever? Patreon.com/ITL Army. We would deeply appreciate that. Next week, we have got our top 300. That'll be a breakdown, a big draft strategy one. And then we've got another mock draft. So we've got those two episodes. Then we're going to have some more guest episodes coming up. Probably next week we'll talk about maybe TGFBI because we'll have a much bigger structure of what's going on. So mock draft and top 300. And then we're going to have our draft forum episodes where we have multiple guests on with us. So those will be fun. And we'll probably even take some of your questions that we can talk about with the guests. So, you know, itlballbag@gmail.com. You can send stuff. And that is it, man. You guys know where to find us in support and to get our ranks because that's coming up this Sunday. We're going to be updating all these bad boys, a lot of stuff. Throughout the week, it's actually also helpful physically talking about the ranks and talking them through. It's something I always love. Like whenever people, I mean, nobody has me on as a guest anymore, unless it's radio. For some reason, radio loves me. I'm on Sirius XM tomorrow, and I was on Sports Grid just the other day with Frank Stanfill. But when people have us on, I like to have conversation. I like to poke, and especially like the really smart people, I like to poke at them and you know, make them think and try to like work through the ranks because sometimes we insulate ourselves in ranking players and then we don't think about the big grand scheme of it. I'm not saying anybody doesn't do that, but the amount of times, you know, we have guests on or guests have us on and we just really poke at conversations about like, okay, well, we like this guy, but, you know, compare what you can do over here. This is what we're doing here, Boggs, and it helps me kind of realign my thought process, and that's why some adjustments will happen over the weekend, and
that's right.
The new
Move
ranks
out,
will look good.
Colomay up that board, boy.
That's right. Colomay is coming up. All right, we're out of here. Bogman of the Welsh, we love you guys. ITL for life. Peace.
Sorry.
Go Spooners.